So this afternoon, the topic is perception, the process of perception, the aggregate of perception. And perception as a process is related to recognizing, it's related to memory, that essentially the process of perception is what helps us to navigate the world and recognize the things that we're navigating in. Perception is what helps us to recognize walls and doors and trees and people and zabutons and zafus and forks and spoons and ratatouille and so it's this process of recognizing, and it's kind of, we could kind of consider it almost a shortcut in our minds that helps us to not have to do so much mental processing all the time. You know, with babies, they're taking the world in for the first time and learning how to recognize, you know, mom and dad and soft and hard, and you know, so they're recognizing all of that for the first time, and the amount of work it takes is quite substantial. And I understand this is part of the reason why babies sleep so much. It takes a lot of energy to do this process of categorizing, filtering, figuring out what our things in the world are. And so it's a process that helps us to navigate the world, and it's a process that also kind of saves energy. It's incredibly useful, this process of perception. You know, we really couldn't navigate the world without it. It not only helps us to recognize objects, things in the world, like the naming aspect. There's a naming aspect of perception, of recognizing what things are, creating concepts or having concepts about things. But there's also the process of perception is also responsible for helping us climb the stairs, for instance, the sense of depth and location is part of the perceptual process. So, you know, for instance, if you've ever climbed a set of stairs at my parents' house, they built a set of stairs, and the measurement was just slightly off, and so all the steps were not quite the same. They were all the same except for the last one, which was just slightly shorter. And for the longest time as I went up those steps, you know, it's like, yep, the body, you know, having the perception of what a step is, was doing that just fine until it got to this top step when it went a little a little lurch. So, you know, the recognition process of the height and depth of the step, that's a part of perception. Location, for instance, noticing as we hear things, the creation of where a location is. Now, we hear a sound, for instance, the sound of a car, and we may have a sense that it's out there. You know, that the process of recognizing location is also a process of perception. So this process of perception does a lot for us. And we certainly wouldn't want to stop it or get rid of it. But it is a process in which delusion easily enters. And that's part of what I'd like to explore tonight, not only just the process of perception, how to recognize it in our experience, but also to begin to see some of the ways that it gets, that with when we don't understand the process of perception as a process, how delusion can creep in and create struggle, suffering. So perception, just as a kind of an introduction in a way, I'll talk mostly tonight in exploring perception around the naming aspect, the recognition, the identification of things. It's one of the easiest places to begin to explore perception as a process in the mind. And there is a kind of a layered, to me it seems like that the process of perception has layers to it. That, for instance, we first might, you know, at one layer we're seeing this, you know, at the level of kind of the bare experience of sight, we're perhaps seeing this as brown and round. And so that's kind of one level of perception, the perception of color and form in sight, the perception of pitch and tone in sound, the perception of salty, sweet, bitter in taste. So that's one level of perception. But perception doesn't stop there. It builds on top of that and recognizes this pretty quickly as bell. So that's a kind of another layer of perception. And likewise with taste, you put something in your mouth and there's probably actually, we don't actually recognize so much brown and round as part of what's happening as we recognize this. We just go right to bell because that's part of the way the shortcut process of perception works and saves us energy. You know, and with food, we put an orange in our mouth and pretty quickly we notice it, recognize it as orange, and we don't necessarily notice the sweet and tanginess as kind of a specific perceptions underneath that. There are these various levels of perception that go into having us recognize what our experience is. And so as mindfulness gets a little bit stronger and more continuous, and actually I'm going to say a caveat right here, right now, I'm going to be talking about exploring this in experience, how we might be able to see this, how we might be able to start to recognize perception in our experience. And yet it's not necessarily something we can try to do. This is more, in a way, this talk is kind of a description of terrain which can be seen as mindfulness gets more continuous. And it's helpful to hear a description of this because without hearing a description of it, you may not see it without hearing this possibility of seeing this. On one retreat, I kept talking about perception and the perceptual process, and one person was sitting there and, you know, thinking, I'll never be able to see that. I obviously can't see that. And she was sitting there thinking, gosh, my mind is so muddy and dull. And she saw this kind of flash of muddy boots flash in her mind. And she's like, wow, maybe that's what she's talking about. And so, you know, that sometimes just the description and hearing this can help to reveal things that are possible to see, but not necessarily to try to see. We can sometimes tie ourselves in knots trying to see things. And so just let this talk come in and see where it goes. And in your exploration of your experience, these kinds of processes may start to become possible to see just through having heard descriptions of this. And so we can start to see this as mindfulness gets more continuous. We can start to see this happen in our minds, start to see perception at work. On one retreat, I was up at Jikoji and sitting out on the porch, and I turned my head and my eyes landed on a bit of color and form over on the side. And I saw the mind create labels for what it was seeing. There was enough continuity of mindfulness that the mind could see it create concepts, create labels for what it was seeing. And the first thing it saw was green. Then it saw jagged. And then it put together, oh, that's a leaf. Just very kind of quick, green, jagged leaf. That's the process of perception at work in the mind, the recognition that happens. Sometimes this can be amusing when you see, sometimes you can see that the mind doesn't quite get it, what it's seeing. Yeah. And it'll try on some things. I was walking into a room at the same retreat center. It might have even been the same retreat. I was walking into the living room at night. It was dark. It was kind of dim, and looked across the room, kind of, you know, it seeing the shadows and things. And my eyes landed on this kind of large form over near the couch. The first thing my mind went to, the first perception that it went to was, it's a deformed being. So, you know, the mind can make mistakes like that. And quickly it was like, no, not a deformed being. But it tried on several other options before it finally actually, probably my eyes adjusted to the light enough to recognize it was a vase of flowers. So we can see this. We can see this process of perception and see actually that perception, well, that it is a process and that it is prone to mistake, actually. That's one of the ways that delusion can enter here. So the process of perception can get us into trouble. We can, Now, one of the teachings of the Buddha around the aggregates is that the aggregates are areas where we tend to congeal a sense of self. We get confused. We cling around the aggregates. And delusion enters around the aggregates when we're not clearly mindful. And so when we are not aware of perception as a process, we can get into trouble by not seeing that what is happening is perception at work. So we can easily get caught by or misunderstand the process of perception. In the suttas, the Buddha uses an analogy for each of the aggregates. We haven't really been going through the analogies for the aggregates, but I'll just tell you about the one for perception. And each of these analogies actually, it's a beautiful teaching. The analogies that the Buddha offers are so evocative. And in this case, the analogies for the aggregates are evocative of how delusion tends to enter in to the picture with each one of these aggregates. And so the analogy for perception is that it is like a mirage. And perception is that, you know, the process of recognizing something. We see something and we recognize it, we create an idea of it. Now the use of this analogy, and as I did a little bit of exploration into what a mirage actually is, and I'm sure that the Buddha understood this in his day. I didn't understand it. I had to actually look it up on the internet, what a mirage actually is. I mean, I had the idea of a mirage as being seeing something that's not there. But what a mirage is, for instance, that one of the classic mirages is seeing an oasis in the desert, seeing water in the desert where it's not there. But what's happening in that situation is not that the mind has gone like all wonky and is envisioning what it wants in the desert, but actually the light waves, the heat on the desert and the light waves that are refracting create basically a mirror. And what you're seeing on the desert is a reflection of the sky. So there's the blue sky above and it's reflected onto the ground and you see a lake of blue on the ground. So what you're seeing with a mirage is a reflection of something that is there. In this case, the sky, it's reflection of the sky. But it's a misunderstanding of what that reflection is. So that's kind of similar, and this is where I think that the Buddha was so right on with his analogies. It's similar to the way perception works, that what what happens with when we take in stuff in the world. We see there's color and form out there. And what's happening is that we are experiencing a reflection of that color and form in our minds. And we're taking it to be something it's not. We're taking it to be reality. I'll get into this in a little bit more in just a little while. But so the perception itself has a deluding quality, that we tend to confuse the perception with the reality. We interpret our perceptions, our concepts as reality, when what's actually happening is that we're experiencing something created in our mind that's a reflection of what's in the world. So what our perceptions are a reflection of reality, and those reflections are very prone to interpretation. And so this is one of the ways in which delusion can enter. There's a great teaching story in the suttas about how this process of perception can get us into trouble through taking what we're recognizing as being reality. And this is the story of the blind people and the elephant. Some of you may be familiar with this story. So I'll read you bits of this. So basically, the Buddha uses this teaching story with his followers. And he describes a situation where there's a king, and the king asks someone to gather the people in the kingdom who have been blind from birth together, and to show them an elephant. So they do this, and to some of the blind people, they presented the head of the elephant, saying, "This is the elephant." To some, they presented the ear, saying, "This is the elephant." To some, the tusk, the trunk, the body, the foot, the hindquarters, the tail, the tuft of the tail, saying, "This is the elephant." And then after they'd done that, the king asked the people, "So, what is an elephant like?" And no big surprise, they had different descriptions. Those who had been shown the head of the elephant replied, "An elephant, your majesty, is just like a water jar." Those who had been shown the ear said, "An elephant is like a winnowing basket." Those who'd been shown the tusk said, "It's just like a plowshare." Those who'd been shown the trunk said, "It's like a plow pole," etc. The body like a storeroom, the foot like a post, the hindquarters like a mortar, the tuft at the end of the tail like a broom. And hearing these descriptions, the blind people began quarreling, saying, "You're wrong. An elephant isn't like that. An elephant is like this." And the story goes that they came to blows. They fought each other with their fists. So this story points out not only that we take in and perceive our experience based on kind of an association here, in this case, seeing, you know, this is very much the way our recognition process works. We recognize something and it's like something else. So each person given the touch contact with a part of the elephant created a concept about what the elephant was. And then it didn't stop there. It's like out of that, they created, and this happens to all of us, when a concept is formed, we create a belief or a view that this is reality. So it's not only about the perception, but the delusion begins to enter because we create a belief a view, an opinion about the reality. We believe the reality of that concept. That believing process is a mental formation. And so this is another way in which these aggregates interact. So, as the Buddha talked about how we identify with our perceptions, the story indicates one of the ways that comes into being, one of the ways that works. We, in this case, the blind people feeling a part of the elephant created the concept and the belief, this is what an elephant is. And then it becomes my perception is true. My perception is correct. My perception is right. And if somebody else comes along and says, no, your perception is wrong, my perception is right, quarrels, strife, we start to fight. And it's not, it's like there's some piece of us that when we create this view or this identification, this is my perception, this is my reality, we're very disturbed when somebody comes along and questions that reality. So our sense of self seems to get threatened if others disagree. So we have this sense of my perceptions are true, but actually it's more diluted than that. We don't even recognize their perceptions happening. It's not even like my perceptions are true, it's like this is reality. We don't even see it's a perception. And so this is one of the ways it's supportive for us as we start to see these processes, seeing perception as a process, seeing perception as perception, helps us to expand our minds to possibilities beyond our own perceptions. You know, it's not incorrect for somebody to say, this part of the elephant is like a broom, or this part of the elephant is like a post. But we don't admit the wider possibilities when our perceptions become, we become identified with the perceptions and they become reality. They become true. So to start to explore, as we begin to explore our experience with the curiosity about possibly recognizing the process of perception, for me at least, one of the easiest places to start to notice this process at work is through the avenue of hearing. Perception happens at all the sense doors. You know, sight. There's the eye, and there's form and color in the world. There's the meeting. There's the consciousness of that. And when that meeting happens, perception of what we've seen happens. Likewise with sound. There's the ear. There's the vibration of the sound waves coming from some object, and the mind recognizes that there's that contact, and then pretty quickly the mind perceives what the sound is. So at all the sense doors, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and even recognizing what's happening in the mind. This is a lot of how our meditation works. We experience a phenomenon, thought. We recognize it as thought. We experience an emotion. We recognize it as confusion or anger. So that process of perception works not only with the physical realm, but also with recognizing our mind states. And so for me, I mean, the process of perception is at work with all the sense doors. And for me, the easiest sense door to begin this exploration is the sense door of hearing. And I think partly for me, at least, it's because the sense door of hearing and the way my mind usually recognizes things have very different qualities to them. So, for instance, the sound comes in the ear. There's a sound. There's a car that drives by, and there's the sound that hits the ear. And there's the recognition of that as car. You know, first there's just the sound, and then the mind recognizes there's a car driving by. And that perception may happen. The mind will recognize that experience of hearing as a car through some like rudimentary form of thought. It might be the mind says the word car. You know, the thought car appears in your mind. Or you might have an image of a car. You know, Gil talked about the various ways thoughts appear. Perception as a rudimentary form of thought, perception can appear in many of these ways. And so there's the actual sound. And this sense of, you know, like on a day like today, I was hearing cars and it's like the watery sound. And then the mind goes, car. Those two things are really different. You know, the actual impact of the sound hitting the ear and the mind saying, labeling kind of with the word car, those are very different things. And so it can be kind of easy to see that that's the perceptual process at work. Sometimes as we see this in our meditation, we actually get a little driven nuts by it. You know, we think we're doing it. We think we're labeling everything. And people will come into interview and say, I can't stop labeling things. You know, it's like I'm sitting here, it's like rain, pressure. And it's not that I'm like trying to do it. In fact, I'm like not necessarily trying to label things, but I'm hearing the labeling happening. That's perception at work. So as the mind settles down, you might start to notice this. It's like not something that's very easy to stop. And so as you recognize this kind of phenomenon, it's like, oh, this is perception at work. This is how the mind recognizes things. So the fact that perception is kind of a rudimentary form of thought is actually one of the key ways that the mind ends up wandering out of the present moment. If we don't see, if we don't consciously recognize the perceptions that happen, that's a very easy way for the mind to slip out of the present moment. Because the perception's a rudimentary form of thought, and almost always, if we're not clearly recognizing a perception, like the sound of a car, the next thing that happens is that we start thinking about cars. So there's the sound, the mind recognizes it's a car, we start thinking about car, we start thinking about where it's going. Oh, maybe it's going to Santa Cruz. Oh, maybe it would be nice to go to Santa Cruz and watch all the waves on the beach. You know, our mind is gone because we haven't seen that rudimentary thought, car, in the mind. And the process of moving from perception to thought to kind of proliferating around thinking happens very quickly. So it's helpful, actually, you know, as we see this, as we begin to see this process, to recognize the difference. We can start to recognize the difference between the perception and as the mind begins to engage in thinking about the perception. Just the bare recognition of a card. Often for me, that's an image. I hear something and my mind creates a picture of the car, the kind of car, you know, it's like, oh, that's that. I mean, I have no idea what kind of car is driving by, but it's got a color, it's got a shape, it's got a brand, you know, it's got a... So the mind has created that, and then it can very easily start thinking. So to tease apart the perception from the thinking that follows it. If you begin to, as we begin to see this, there's less opportunity for the deluding nature of perception to enter in. You know, you hear that car drive by and your mind creates the image of whatever, you know, the red Acura Integra driving to Santa Cruz. And, you know, if we don't see that, it's possible we would believe that actually there was a red Acura Integra driving to Santa Cruz out there on the road. We don't know. We don't know what it was. But that perception can easily be mistaken for reality. Our perceptions of experience also have an impact, and this is again a way that things begin to weave together with the other aggregates. When we perceive something, you know, something like perceiving a car may not have that much of an emotional impact on you. But yesterday or a couple days ago, I gave the example around, you know, kind of a classic misperception around walking into a dim room and seeing a coiled form in the corner. And perceiving it, I mean, there may be a quick perception, that's a snake. That's a perception. Kind of has the shape and form of a snake. The mind recognizes it. The first thing the mind goes to is, that's a snake. And the mind can respond to that with fear. And so from perceptions can come mental formations. A moment later, when your eyes adjust to the dark and you see it's actually a rope, the fear usually dissipates. So, you know, we see this connection between the perception and the formations. And this is, I think, easiest to see when perception makes a mistake. We see that we're reacting to the perception, not the reality. That's easiest to see when perception makes a mistake, like seeing the coiled rope in the corner. When we mistake it as snake and we see that it's actually a rope, we can see that what we were reacting to was in our minds, not the reality. And so this is a beginning of being able to recognize that what we are responding to is our concepts. It's what's in our mind. It's not actually what's out there. So through this, we start to see that our experience, everything that we experience, is actually mediated through the mind. Our reality, what we are experiencing, is mind-created. This can be a little freaky at first. I'm not a believer in all there is just mind. I actually think there are things out there, like I think you're all sitting out there. And you know, and I'm taking in beings and things that are existing in the world. But when my mind is clearer, I recognize that what I am actually knowing is not the actuality of you, but a representation of you in my mind. So it's easier to see, in some ways, it's easy to see that what we when we look at the world of our thoughts, we can see, you know, when we take birth into a memory or into some kind of futurizing thing, we can kind of see that that's mind created. And it's quite startling at times to see just how fully we can be living in a concept, in an idea. That's kind of the flavor of just how real our minds can make things. Dreams are like this. I mean, you know, when we're dreaming, it's like it is so clear. It's so real. We smell things. We taste things. We're moving through the world. We feel our experience. It's mind created. So it's kind of easier to see that through reflecting on dreams or seeing how we get, when we get lost in a world of thought and we come out of it, we see, wow, I was living in a mind-created world. So that's we can start to see that we live in a mind-created world through those avenues. It's a little harder to see that everything we are experiencing is a mind-created world. I had a kind of a startling demonstration of this. There's just how kind of the process of perception creates this reality and has us believe it through an exhibit at the Exploratorium. I don't know if any of you have been to the Exploratorium. And I know they've moved recently, so I don't know if this exhibit is still at the Exploratorium. But I went with a friend and my nephew to the Exploratorium. And when we walked in that day, we walked in and we saw, we just kind of take in this big warehouse-like room. But on the far back of the Exploratorium, there were some flashing lights on the ceiling. And as I looked more closely, it was like there were about 10 bars, maybe, 6 feet long, maybe about, 4 inches, 3-4 inches in diameter, rods basically hanging. And there were lights that were flashing along the length of the rod. And there were 10 of those. And just like, I was just seeing these random flashing lights on these rods. And I looked at that and I thought, I wonder what that's an exhibit about. I'll have to check that out later. And, we were wandering around. I didn't think much about it. And at one point, we stopped to take a break and sit down to have a drink. And I was sitting there having a drink, kind of looking around. And my nephew's kind of looking around. And he goes, "It's butterflies!" And I said, "What? Huh?" And he's looking up at the flashing lights. And I said, "What? What are you talking about?" And then he said, "It's a school bus!" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I looked up at the bar and I saw a bunch of yellow flashing lights and a little bit of red flashing light. And I thought, well, I see lights that, are kind of like the lights that a school bus would be, but there's not a school bus up there. And then then we went on to do something else. And then when we came back out, I stopped and I said, "I want to see what is going on here? What is he seeing that I'm not seeing?" And so I just stood there and I just looked up at these bars for a while. And it's kind of like, I think it's kind of that the eyes have to kind of track across the bars at a particular speed or something. But as I stood there and looked up at these bars, suddenly it was as if there were no longer individual bars, but there was like a movie screen that was 60 feet long and 6 feet deep. And on that movie screen, there was a school bus moving across the screen. The detail that I could see on that school bus was so clear that I could read the name of the school district on the side of the school bus. This is a really great example of how perception works and how taking in information, basically the mind was taking in these little blips of information, little blips of light flashing, and It was creating the visual image of a school bus. There was no school bus projected up there. There was empty space between those rods. And yet the mind created the perception of that. It's very startling to see that. You know, that was very it was very clear to me that that school bus was not in reality out there. It was in my mind. It existed only in my mind. That's actually how we're taking in everything. And delusion enters into the picture by having us believe that that screen is really there, that what we are perceiving is reality. Again, my sense is that what we're perceiving is reflection of reality. And, you know, a reflection of reality, if it's a good mirror, reflection is good. You know, it's like when the mirror is clear and clean and true, we're seeing an accurate, perhaps fairly accurate representation of reality. But our minds are more like a hall of mirrors, with warped mirrors and curved mirrors and distorted mirrors. The way that we perceive things is prone to interpretation. So, for example, you're in conversation with somebody, having a conversation with somebody, and that person raises their eyebrows. There's a perception, there's a recognition that that person has raised their eyebrows. And yet, perhaps because of associations with raised eyebrows, it's very quick that there's this kind of association that this person, that we feel dismissed by this person. And that person's like. And so perhaps raised eyebrows has a particular association, an interpretation that goes with it. And again, because we're not seeing perception and all the processes that are around it, it gets conflated. The perception and the idea that this is what raised eyebrows mean get conflated. I was in the Peace Corps in a country in the South Pacific, and it took me a while to understand. I was told this, but it took me a while to understand that when somebody raised their eyebrows at you, it meant they were saying yes. And I remember having a conversation with somebody, and I was waiting for him to respond. And as far as I saw, he was just sitting there. And I asked the question again, and he just sat there. And I asked the question again. He was very patient with me. But that time I saw the eyebrows go up. Oh, actually, in retrospect, I remembered the eyebrows had gone up before. But my perception was that there was no response. But actually, there had been a response each time. So perception is very influenced by views, by assumptions, by associations, by interpretations. This is a big way in which delusion enters the picture. And then another way perceptions get us into trouble in a way is in the creation of suffering. I think we're all pretty familiar with the way wanting comes into play around the creation of suffering. We suffer so much because we want things to be other than they are. We want to have things that we don't have. We want to hold on to things that we do have. We want to get rid of things we don't like. All of this wanting is a mind construct. It's a mental formation. And as we start to see that mental formation at play, we begin to recognize that, you know, that's a construct of the mind. It's the mind at work wanting something. And if that mental construct is loosened, there's a lot less suffering. And so we start to see that the mind creates our suffering in that way, through this process of wanting things to be different. But what's also happening in that process is that the thing that we think we want to change, to fix, to have, to get rid of, is also a process in our minds. It's a concept. We don't actually really want something that's out there because everything that we're experiencing is mind generated. We want an idea. When the mind starts to see this, it's like, you know, not only is our suffering created through this wanting, but what I want is simply an idea. It's not a reality. This is pretty powerful recognition. On one retreat, I was experiencing quite a lot of suffering around wanting a particular meditative experience. I recognized that the wanting was at play, and I was, you know, looking at the wanting, seeing the wanting, feeling into that. And at some point I began recognizing that this wanting was expressing itself by having these fantasies of reporting the experience that I wanted to have to my teacher in an interview. So I saw that, you know, this is the mind was wanting to describe that I'd had this experience. And as I was seeing this fantasy in my mind, I realized I had no idea what I wanted there. It was just an idea of wanting to tell somebody that I had had an experience. That what I wanted was a construct in the mind. This is what we want. We want ideas. And so within this perceptual process, delusion enters in to create the illusion that there's actually something there to cling to. There's something there to want. Something permanent, something reliable, something controllable. So it's a powerful thing to start to witness these processes at work, to witness how our mind does what it habitually does. As we see, as the mind sees what it's doing, it realizes how ludicrous it is, how like futile it is. The mind realizes that it's creating the suffering by the wanting, and not only that, it's creating what it wants. It begins to understand that that process of wanting things to be other than they are is based on delusion. So we've been talking some about how we can use the aggregates. I mean, here, mostly what I've been talking about so far is seeing the aggregates at work, seeing how they function in our minds. We can also, because the aggregates are amenable to conscious direction, we can cultivate mindfulness. There is that possibility. It's not an I doing that. There's a process of hearing something, hearing teachings, and then a process of resonating with teachings, and a process of interest that arises, and a process of trying it out. It's all a process. There doesn't have to be anyone in there directing the show. These processes direct the show, basically. And so we can explore cultivating these aggregates in certain ways, explore the processes of what might be useful ways to use the aggregates, skillful ways to use the aggregates. We've talked about that a little bit, you know, with exploring pleasure, using the feeling aggregate, noticing the pleasure that arises as our practice deepens. Cultivating the skillful mental formations of mindfulness, wisdom, concentration. In the suttas, the Buddha encourages us to cultivate certain perceptions, to actually incline our perceptual process to recognize impermanence. He says, cultivate the perception of impermanence, cultivate the perception of unreliability in impermanence. Cultivate the perception of not self. In one sutta, he particularly stresses that the perception of impermanence should be cultivated because this establishes the perception of not self. He says, a follower named Magia, he says, the perception of impermanence should be cultivated for the removal of the conceit I am. For when one perceives impermanence, Magia, the perception of not self is established. When one perceives not self, one reaches the removal of the conceit I am, which is called Nibbana here and now. And so he's encouraging us to actually cultivate this recognition of impermanence, inclining the mind to recognize impermanence. Now, at first, this recognition is more of a concept. I remember playing with this perception of impermanence on one long retreat. And I was a veggie chopper. And you know, it's pretty clear that things change while you're chopping vegetables. You know, you get this pile of mushrooms, and then after a while, it's a pile of sliced mushrooms. And so it's pretty clear that there's change going on. And so I was just reminding myself, you know, this is change. This is impermanence. And yet it was pretty clear, you know, it's like nothing was very startling about this. It's like, well, yeah, duh, you know. But, you know, so I was just kept playing with it, kept working with it. And at one point, I remember one day we walked in and there was this mound. It was like, my perception was like it was like 5 feet tall, a mound of kale, or maybe it was chard, like on the table when we walked in. And my mind like went, big mound of big mound of chard. And it created in this situation, it created like this permanence around that mound of chard. And then, you know, chopping. And then I looked up and the mound of chard was gone. That moment was like, poof, impermanence. It's like the mind saw through that laying on the idea of the permanent mound. It's like the mind had created this permanent mound of chard. And then suddenly it was gone. It's like, wow, that's impermanence. And so we can incline our minds to recognize impermanence. But initially, mean, we have to be careful not to attribute that we're really seeing, deeply seeing impermanence when we're just like recognizing change. Somehow there's a way that when we really see impermanence, it seems often kind of startling. It's kind of shocking because it bursts the delusion of believing the reality of the concept. And it's kind of a clear experience of seeing that truth, that that concept is just a concept. So much of why we take things to be permanent is because we're holding on to a concept in our minds. The actual experience out there is continually changing. There's nothing stable about the actual experience. But our minds hold on to a concept. They hold on to the perception and live with that perception. And that's where the delusion of permanence creeps in. And so we can cultivate this perception of impermanence to help to remind ourselves that we're living in this world of impermanence. This deeply supports a letting go, a restructuring, a re-navigating of our inner life towards letting go of clinging. Because we see that there isn't anything to cling to, actually. And so let's sit for a moment.